Hello and welcome to the second edition of the BDG Plum Tree Podcast. I got some good feedback from our last trivia contest, so I will start off by announcing the winner and the answer to the question. First, I might as well repeat the question. It was, who were the three founders of Plum Tree? And I needed the names and spelling of each of the founders. That's easy for two of them, but a little bit difficult for one. One of the founders is a Russian gentleman who has a difficult name to spell. Anyway, the answer to the question is Joe McVeigh, Glenn Kelman, and Kirill Shankman. And it turns out, I tried to make this real difficult for everybody, but it turns out that the answer to the trivia question was actually in a previous blog post on the BDG Plumtree blog, located at bdg-plumtree.blogspot.com. And so I was kind of upset when I found out that the person who won just read the blog. Anyway, I guess it's good news and bad, because it means at least they're reading the blog. So anyway, the winner was Marty Kimball, and she actually works for BDG, which is also kind of sad. I'm thinking in the future I'm going to make all BDG employees ineligible to win our trivia contest, because it's just not fair. Anyway, all you had to do was look at the blog, I guess, so everyone had a fair shot at it. Anyway, that's the answer to the trivia question. Today, I would like to go over a few of the questions I get asked a lot about Plum Tree. I'm not going to try and cover more than just one of those questions right now, and that is a very basic one. Oftentimes, I'll be at a cocktail party or in an elevator or wherever, and someone will ask me, what is Plum Tree? And I can give a very short 30-second answer, or even a 10-second answer, or I can go on for 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm going to give you both those answers this evening. I guess we'll start with the short answer. I always tell people that Plum Tree is an enterprise portal, kind of like a Yahoo for business. And everyone understands Yahoo, so that makes it easy. And because they understand Yahoo, they understand Plum Tree immediately. And I can maybe elaborate a little bit and say, well, they're like my Yahoo, they have my pages. And they're like groups.yahoo.com because they have communities. So I sometimes go off in that direction as well. That's the short answer. The long answer, of course, is that Plum Tree has a very interesting and a very exciting history that's gone on for the past 8 years or so. And I thought what I'd do is cover some of the key points in that history. Starting with their inception in 1997, when Joe, Glenn, and Kirill decided to start Plum Tree, they basically said, well, Yahoo's been very successful on the external internet, so the consumer internet, I should say. And so Plum Tree, they decided, was going to be the equivalent of Yahoo on the corporate internet. So the consumer internet and the corporate internet, they drew a parallel between the two. And they said, well, Yahoo's been very successful in creating a directory of internet content. So we're going to create a directory of corporate content. That's where Plum Tree got its roots. It was all about following Yahoo's path. So the first feature in the product, of course, was a directory. And that directory at the time had a very curious name. It was called the Library Card Catalog for Corporate Content. That's a mouthful, but that was the name. That was the slogan. That was the tagline. We all had these funny business cards at the time. They were quite entertaining because they were light brown, kind of a beige color, and they each had a hole in the top at the center. And everyone would say, why do you have a hole in your business card? And the answer, of course, was that they were trying to make it seem like we were a library card catalog for corporate content. So those holes were just like the holes in the Dewey Decimal cards that would be found in most libraries, I guess, when I was growing up. These days, it's all done with computers. Fancy that. But back in the day, they used to have Dewey Decimal cards, and those cards look like our business cards. Or I guess I should say our business cards look like those cards. Anyway, the word card persists to this day in the product. They've been called different things over the years. They've been called cards, documents, links. But when you look at the API and you're trying to deal with a document or link in the portal, you'll see the term IPT card. And IPT card is a reference to the library card catalog. And I guess the way they came up with this crazy slogan was that they wanted to store not the whole document, but just a pointer to the document. So the whole concept of having a library card catalog for corporate content was that Plumtree would store metadata. It would store the title of the document, the author, a short summary, and perhaps some other information about the document, such as when it was published or maybe some keywords to help find it, help in search, I guess. So that's the idea. And then, of course, it would also tell you where the document could be found. So in the Dewey Decimal System, it might say, well, it's over on the third rack in row A6 with a decimal, you know, dot 224, and that's where you'd go find it in rack A, row 6, dot 224. So you go hunt around and find your little publication or book. So that's the idea behind the document directory or library card catalog for corporate content. And really, when they put out 1.0, that was really the only feature in Plumtree. It was a this document directory or this card catalog. And they also added a few other things. One feature in particular that I really liked, it was called self-service subscriptions. And the way that worked is you had, first of all, you had a publication. A publication was a way to take a document or series of documents based on some sort of criteria and publish them out in some sort of form, like you could publish them in email. And then they had what were called self-service subscriptions, so you can come in and you can decide which publications you wanted to subscribe to, so you could actually turn on and turn off your subscriptions and manage these publications. So when new documents were entered into the directory that matched your the criteria of that publication, then they'd be sent out to you. So they had a an engine essentially that would crawl in new documents into this document directory. They had crawlers. They had accessors that would translate the documents into, you know, pull off the metadata that you needed to store and to create these cards. They had a document directory. They had a web server, a simple web server. It's actually built as a Windows NT service, and the service that ran the crawler jobs and the publications and the subscriptions and the web server itself were all the same service. It was like the Plumtree service. And that was kind of an interesting architecture, because that meant that if a crawler was running, then your web performance was slowed down by the fact that you were crawling documents. So it wasn't until version 3.0 when they started to break out the different services to allow for better performance. Anyway, so that's about it for 1.0. The interface was kind of interesting. It was very business-like, the website. It was all built in ASP and DCOM and COM and Visual C++. And the interface was all white, and it had a very like library sort of stifled, stiff, starched shirt sort of look to it. And then they came out with another version, 2.0, which was just really 1.0 all over again with a new UI. And that UI was much more sort of cool and hip and internet-like. But really all the same features were there, the document directory, publications, subscriptions, etc., crawlers. Then the real breakthrough in Plumtree came in version 3.0, when they finally decided to componentize their architecture. And what that meant was crawlers went out onto a job server, so they had a job to run crawlers and publications and search. And they had another service, a DCOM service that would plug into IIS. At this time, by the way, everything only ran on Windows. Everything was all Microsoft-based. And these services all ran separately and communicated with each other using DCOM. And the whole UI was revamped. They still had this interesting, sort of curious Windows application called Content Manager, or affectionately known by all the developers as ConMan. And ConMan was where you did all your administration. It's where you created your crawlers and your set up your publications and your subscriptions and your accessors and your document types, and all that stuff was done in a Windows application. And the industry press beat up Plumtree about that for a long time, saying, why do you guys have this silly Windows application doing all of your administration? You really should have web-based administration. So they had to rethink that, and that came around at 3.5. Anyway, version 3 was the same sort of stuff, all broken up into components. And of course, you also had the first gadgets in 3.5. This idea was sort of the brainchild of Joe McVeigh and Sam Charrington, who was an early thought leader at Plumtree. And they came up with this idea of having a little snippet of content, because Yahoo had come out with My Yahoo, so they wanted to keep pace and show something like My Yahoo. So they came up with the native gadget. And a native gadget was basically just like an ASP include. You just sort of dropped in this ASP file, and the portal would go grab it The funny thing is it had to be in a folder in the right place and it had to be called gadget.asp. And then it would go and grab your gadget.asp and stick it into this web page and aggregate it for you, and it would allow you to set settings, and it had some cool stuff. It was more advanced than just doing an ASP include, but it made the ability to have a My Yahoo-like experience in the portal. So that was version 3.0. And then right around the time when I joined the development team, it was about when they started to come out with 3.5. They were just starting the development for that. That was all about web-based administration. So we had to write editor after editor after editor, and this whole editor framework to allow you to edit all the objects that you previously had to edit in Conman and Content Manager on the web. And you still needed Conman because there are a few things that we couldn't do, like I believe jobs, when you had to edit jobs, you couldn't do that on the web just yet, but later we came out with that in 4.0. So 3.5 was web-based administration and really nothing else. They still had the same features. They still had the document directory, which is the main part of the product. They had crawlers. They had publications, subscriptions. Self-server subscriptions went by the wayside. That we lost those. I'm not sure why. But it's always a feature I wish that Plumtree would put back in the product, because I thought it was kind of interesting and kind of useful. Anyway, that was the version 3.5. Then out came 4.0. And 4.0, the attempt there was to make everything look like Yahoo groups. So they wanted to add collaborative and community-based infrastructure to Plumtree. So they came up with this concept of communities, which were like static My Pages. They were like My Pages that were set up by other people. So you had like a marketing manager set up a My Page that was just for the marketing group, and all the people in marketing would go there and they would collaborate and look at each other's work and look at performance metrics and things like that. So that was the idea behind 4.0. That was a major improvement. There were a few other things as well, but communities were the big push. And then, of course, there was also a technical change, which is that you no longer had to write gadgets natively. You no longer had to make your gadgets ASP includes. You can now write remote gadgets. And the big excitement there was that you could write your gadgets in Java. You could write them in Perl or in PHP or whatever you wanted. That was very exciting. And at first, there were only gadgets in Java and really COM, ASP. But later, we'll talk more about how you can write gadgets in other languages too. At the same time, they started to transition the word gadget over to portlet, because the industry was talking more about portlets. There were other portal competitors like Sequoia and CoreChange and Viador and Epicentric, and these portals all had portlets. So Plumtree decided, well, enough of this gadget business. We're going to start writing portlets now. Then they came out with 4.5 and later 4.5WS. And the big deal there was they replaced Search with it used to be Verity, a bundled version of Verity. They replaced it with a product called Ripfire that they purchased and integrated, so it became a more tightly integrated search. And they also broke off a lot of their services like crawlers and search into what were called web services. So web services were getting hot at this time. And they decided, well, we're going to make all these services web services. So we're going to make them accessible through SOAP. So we're going to have a SOAP-based UI, I'm sorry, a SOAP-based API for search, a SOAP-based API for publications, for authentication, for all these things. So they built this SOAP-based API, and they called it 4.5WS for web services. And then finally, 5.0 came out. And in 5.0, they revamped the entire UI. In fact, the UI was based on entirely in Java. So I should back up a minute and talk about the whole Microsoft to Java sort of push that happened at Plumtree. So at first, Plumtree was very much a Microsoft protege, a Microsoft company. So they did everything in Microsoft. They wrote the whole server in Visual C++, wrote the UI in ASP. Now, they realized that they need to support Unix because they had some big customers on the government side and in very big business who would only run Unix. So they had to have a Unix story. So they built this version of the product called 4.5WS for Solaris, which was kind of scary because they took the entire product and they ran it on a COM emulator called ChiliSoft and ran all this COM on Solaris. So there are people today that still run this product, actually. It's kind of an interesting hybrid of COM and Solaris code, and it's really frightening. But anyway, people run it to this day, and they've obviously been told that it'll eventually reach its end of life and that they should upgrade to one of the 5.0 versions or even G6, but there are still people that run it today. Anyway, the 4.5WS version featured a Java UI. It was all written in JSP, like the ASP UI. And it bridged over to the COM code using a technology called Jacob, which is a Java to COM bridge. So, they used the same technology in 5.0, but they decided to write the UI in a very nice object-oriented MVC pattern fashion. So they wrote this whole UI in Java, and then had it use the Jacob bridge to talk to all of the COM objects. So underlying the 5.0 server, it was the same old COM server they've had since version 3. Same old stuff, just with a new UI. And at the same time, they added some new features that were very handy, like sub-portals, which were really useful because they let you brand the portal in a new way for different users. You can have different branding. You could have different headers and footer portlets and navigation. And the biggest improvement, though, was really the UI and the way you customize the UI. So a lot of people got burned between version 4.5 and 5.0 and their upgrades, because in version 4.5, to customize the UI, you basically had to go in and just splice in lines of code inside your ASPs, or if you're on 4.5WS, your JSPs. But now, in 5.0, you could build to UI APIs. You could say, all right, I'm going to build a navigation against the pluggable navigation API, or I'm going to build a portal event interface, or I'm going to build something against an API. That was very handy, because now your customization, as you move from 5.0 to 5.01 to 5.02 to 5.03 to 5.04, you wouldn't have to rewrite your customizations. You could keep them and just plug them back in. And you can pile them all to a separate jar or DLL. Anyway, the whole shift from Microsoft to Java came about around this time when they started to write 5.0, because they realized that they liked programming in Java, so they wrote the entire 5.0 UI in Java. Then every night during the build process, they'd run a tool called the jump tool, which would take the Java source and convert it to C# source on the fly and then build it. In order to do this, they wrote an entire layer of code underneath the two UIs, the Java UI and the C# UI, and that was called Open Foundation, or XP Foundation. That had an implementation of everything in Java and in C#, so that whenever the jump tool encountered a class that it didn't understand, it would just say, all right, I'm going to jump over that and skip it, not port it over, and then I'll call the implementation of that class based on whether it's Java or C#. So that's how they managed to get all the Java functionality and C# functionality all into the same UI and have the code port over cleanly. Now the problem is that they really couldn't leverage any of the C# benefits like .NET Web Controls at all. They had to keep everything at the lowest common denominator level. And that was fine, and they were able to write a nice UI doing that. And they stuck with that whole process of having a COM server with a Java and a C# UI for all of the four versions of 5.0. Or I guess there were five versions of 5.0. 5.0, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, and 0.4. Then, just recently, like a few weeks ago, they came out with G6, which is an entire port of everything to Java. So the whole COM server is now defunct. And there is no longer a COM server. Of course, COM doesn't exist really anymore. Everything's .NET. So what they did was they wrote the whole thing. Jump was so successful for them that they wrote the entire product in Java, rewriting all that COM stuff. And now they jumped the whole thing from soup to nuts, all the way down from the lowest level core calls, all the way up to the UI. Everything's in Java. Everything gets ported over to C#. And then the whole thing is compiled into a big old C#.NET stack and a big old Java stack. So now they can run on IIS, and they can run just as well on Tomcat, on WebSphere, on WebLogic. And that's how they accomplish their current code, and that's how they do G6. And in G6, really, there wasn't much else to speak of in terms of new features except development tools, which were much improved, and also experience definitions and the credential vault and a few other things, but mostly focused around making it easier to integrate your web apps with the portal. Okay, so that's the history of Plumtree's core product. There are also other products that I'll talk about in another podcast, because I'm already getting kind of longer than I want to be in my typical podcast. We're almost at 20 minutes, so I'll talk a little bit about those products right now, but save them each for another podcast. Anyway, those products are Content Server, Collaboration Server, Studio Server, and now Analytics Server and Process Server. So those are what are called the server products. And what I'll do is I'll probably devote a podcast to each of those products. So I'd like to wrap up for today. I want to ask this week's trivia question, and I tried to make it a little harder, but also shouldn't be something that a little bit of Google won't help you figure out. So the trivia question for this week is, which company, which venture capital company made the first investment in Plumtree? And I'll give you a few hints. They also invested in Yahoo, which is not a coincidence. Anyway, so the company that invests in Yahoo and Plumtree, they're located on Sand Hill Road in Palo Alto, where all the other venture capitalists are. Please tell me the name of the company that first invested in Plumtree. Send me an email to podcast@bdg-online.com or visit the blog and comment on the blog. Anyway, first person to correctly answer the question will receive a fabulous prize. And BDG employees this time are not eligible, so no answering the question. You can answer it, but I won't give you the prize. Anyway, that's it for today. I'm glad you were able to join us. I'm glad you listened in. And if you have suggestions for future podcasts, please send them to podcast@bdgonline.com. And again, thanks for listening and enjoy Plumtree.